Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Welcome to the Julia Hartley Brewer Daily. If you've missed any of my talk radio breakfast show, don't worry. We've put some of the punchiest bits of this morning's show into a bite-sized podcast, the Julia Hartley Brewer Daily. Enjoy.
Online, on DAB, and on the Talk Radio app. Talk Radio.
Let's get to my next guest before we get to the news. Tom Tugendhat is chair of the Foreign Affairs Select Committee and a Conservative MP and joins us now to talk about, well, a number of different things, including the defence spending boost. Good morning to you, Tom.
Morning, Julia. How are you?
Very well indeed. A lot of people, particularly those working in the public sector, who are going to be told next week they're going to get a public sector pay freeze unless they work in the NHS, might perhaps be a little bit unhappy about it when we know the government has got spare cash because they spent more than £16 billion in defence spending announced yesterday. How are you going to sell that one to the public?
Well, I'm afraid it's one of those things that matters. And it just matters because the world is changing incredibly fast. We know that. You and I have spoken about the threats that are coming up around the world from countries that are trying to change the way we work, the way we travel internationally, the way we trade. You know, countries like China that are fundamentally challenging our system. But we also know that things like technology and COVID and even Brexit are changing the way that we interact. And that's why we really need to invest in how we work with others around the world and how we defend our interests and work with partners. And I'm afraid, you know, I wish we had a choice on this. I wish we did have an ability to say, hey, hang on, we'll opt out of the world for a few years and we'll come back when we're ready. But that's just not how it works. The world is changing around us.
Do you think that it might be a good idea for MPs to vote to agree that they don't take their more than £3,000 pay rise that they are going to be approved next April at a time when public finances are going to be in the doldrums? You know, you're already on, what, top 10% earnings. Reality is, you know, if you're going to be saying to soldiers and police officers you're getting a pay freeze, whether or not IPSA, the body that decides these things, says you're worth an extra £3,000 a year is kind of irrelevant.
Look, I've never negotiated my pay when I've been in the public sector. I didn't do it when I was in the army. I don't do it now. There isn't a good way of doing this. There really isn't. There's two ways. Well, there's two ways of doing it. Julia, there are two ways of MPs doing pay. Either an independent group does it or I vote for my own pay. I just don't think it's a good idea for me to be voting to tell you to pay me more. I really don't. I think it's better that I leave it to independent people to decide. I do think it would be wrong for them to put up politicians' pay if public sector workers are not, are not going up at the same time. I mean, you know, I think that's blatantly obvious that politicians should be in line with public sector workers. But I really don't think it's a good idea that politicians decide their own pay.
No, I think a lot of that's the reason why it was taken out of a politician's hands, wasn't it? Can I also ask you about the bullying report into Priti Patel? We understand this report, when it has now been leaked, could well be published today. Boris Johnson has had it on his desk for a couple of months, we're told. But a Home Office inquiry into whether or not she had bullied staff, claims have been made even from her former permanent secretary. She has found to have breached the ministerial code. She's expected to apologise now. It was said that she had not always met the high standards required of ministers, although they said some of her actions may have been unintentional. They also criticised some senior civil servants as well. Is it really tenable for Priti Patel to be found to have bullied her staff and to remain in her job?
Well, let's read what the report says. I haven't read it yet. I will read it when it comes out. But I think it's important that we stand up to defend those who are bullied and make sure that bullying is stamped out of our institutions, certainly out of the public sector, as much as possible. But it's also important that we have robust politicians who are able to deliver things that people vote for. And, you know, I don't know what this report says, so I'm not going to interpret it. But I think it's important that we have people who can who can defend the things that they're voted in to deliver.
Do you think there are quite a lot of double standards, though? Some of the people who are criticising Priti Patel, including David Lammy, the Shadow Justice Secretary, Labour MP, are people who were quite happy to defend John Bercow, Commons Speaker, when he was doing their Remainer work for them in Parliament, even though he faced huge allegations and very, very convincing allegations from senior figures about bullying under his leadership.
Well, look, the only thing I'll say on that is I saw John Bercow bully and belittle Andrea Leadsom on numerous occasions on the floor of the House of Commons and indeed in the corridors around it. I actually saw it. I have never seen Priti Patel be anything other than kind to members of the committee staff and to individuals around her. Now, I'm not telling you that that's true everywhere. I don't know. But that's my experience of Priti Patel and that's my experience of John Bercow.
Across the UK, online, on DAB, and on your smart speaker, Talk Radio.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Online, on DAB, and on the Talk Radio app. Talk Radio.
Can never really be another week in this country without some form of wokedom. Well, basically just trying to ruin our fun, particularly as Christmas is approaching. Now, I'm not a fan of the Christmas song being played before 1st of December, whichever song it is. And everyone's got their favourites. Everyone's got the ones they just, oh, if I hear that again, I'll chop my own ears off. But I say one of a lot of people's favourites, we know it's on every Christmas album, is The Pogues' Fairy Tale of New York. Here's a little reminder of it.
The boys of the NY painting chorus still singing Galway Bride, and the bells are ringing out for Christmas Day.
Well, I mean, that is, to me, one of the sounds of Christmas. But yesterday it was announced that Radio 1 are going to play an edited version of the Christmas hit to avoid offending its younger audience. Now, the hit featuring Kirsty MacColl, of course, the late, great, great Kirsty MacColl, released in 1987, has been the focus of debate a number of times because of some of its controversial lyrics. It involves a couple who are really quite horrible to each other and includes some words, which I'm not going to say at this time of day simply because children might be listening and going to school. And that's because there are Ofcom rules about these things, and I don't want to have parents having to say, what does that word mean, mummy? However, if you're listening to Radio 1, you're going to expect to hear songs with some lyrics that you might not necessarily agree with. But Radio 1 say they're going to water down the track. They feel their younger listeners are likely to be sensitive to derogatory terms about gender and sexuality. Well, let's talk about this with Baroness Claire Fox. She's director of the Academy of Ideas and also author of a brilliant book called I Find That Offensive. Good morning to you, Claire.
Good morning.
Now, I think it's the first time I've spoken to your nurse since you've become a baroness, but I hope you don't mind if we're going to go with the informality of Claire instead of Baroness Fox, if that's all right.
Now,
please do. I just sort of censored myself then in starting this discussion, not reading out words, which I think a lot of parents would say, well, you know what, I'd rather my six-year-old didn't hear at breakfast or we're in the car or on the way to school or whatever. And people do that all the time. I don't want people to be swearing before the 9 o'clock watershed and the like on air. Radio 1 said it's specific. It's not like you can't use those words, they have to be edited out. It's because they would be sensitive for younger listeners, the millennials who'd be upset about hearing words which were derogatory terms for gender and sexuality. What do you make of that?
I think that you put the right emphasis on it. These are lyrics in a song. In that sense, they've got a certain validity because they're what makes the music work. And as a consequence, the way that the BBC made a decision on behalf of their listeners, who they assumed would be offensive for political reasons is an act of censorship. And a lot of people have said, and I get this, you know, they think, oh, this is just people like you, Claire, stirring up a controversy over a song. There's always trouble about these things every year. Is this part of you stirring up the culture war? But I mean, I didn't issue the statement. The BBC actually issued a statement clearly stating it was going to take this act as a political act. And it intrigues young people, and not the children you're referring to, not this morning, but actually young teenagers, young people in their 20s who listen to Radio 1, who should be and are familiar with the fact that lyrics are part of the art form of whatever song, and there's an awful lot of offensive words in lyrics. So are they going to go through and kind of comb through them and do the same to every single song?
Well, that's the interesting thing, isn't it? And we're used to things like, say, I'm thinking Kanye West and Jamie Foxx, Gold Digger. I mean, you know, I'm a white person. I'm not happy with saying that word. Singing it along as a lyric, the word that rhymes with a gold digger. I'm pretty sure I've done it when I'm just singing along to the original track. But we know on the radio they play it. The word is muted. You just can't hear it. You don't even know the word exists if you haven't heard the unedited version. There's a difference, isn't there, between sort of saying, look, children are likely to be listening. It's a family radio show or TV show, and we just don't impose those words on people sort of out of the blue. But there do seem to be different rules for different artists, don't there? I mean, a lot of the rap songs around the moment, and particularly those by black artists, and particularly black female artists, there doesn't seem to be an issue with. I mean, most of the songs by Rihanna and Cardi B, the lyrics are absolutely disgusting and obscene. Now, I can choose to listen, choose not to listen, to buy, to not to buy, but there doesn't seem to be the same issue with that.
No, I mean, it seems inconsistent. But the most important thing is, are we in a situation where a radio station is going to make artistic decisions on behalf of the artist? Now, there's a complication here, which is the Pogues say, oh, well, we don't care that they've removed the words. I mean, you know, so I don't want to pretend that the artists are all upset. I object to the fact that a radio station did this on our behalf, as it were, in case somebody's offended. But I also think there's a context here. I've been listening to you talking about some of the controversies around COVID and around evidence and data. And I just saw that a film that was doing very well, that was a film made by Unlock yesterday, interviewing a doctor. Dr. Eden has been removed by YouTube.
Well, yeah, Mike, let's just clarify. Mike Eden, we've had on the show a number of times. He's a former vice president.
Show, right?
Oh, many times, yeah. He used to be a VP at Pfizer. Incredibly, you know, absolutely knows his stuff. He's not random bloke off the street with a theory.
Right, yeah.
He's producing, you know, evidence-based, you know, arguments about why he believes that the epidemic is over and you know, and testing is the problem rather than, you know, we're not seeing excess deaths, etc. Etc. But the fact that stuff gets taken off YouTube as opposed to discussed and debated.
I saw lots of people watching it yesterday and discussing it, discussing for and against, you know, pros and cons. Mm. Some people had really enjoyed the video, found it informative. It was removed today. Also yesterday, the Law Commission came out with a report of potential changes they want to make to the law around hate crime, which included, by the way, the idea that there should be the removal of the exemption for home properties in terms of whether you say offensive things. So the point about this fairy tale in New York is, it's not just a one-off, is it? The context for this decision being taken, which is you can't hear that, it's offensive. I feel as though we're in a more censorious climate. Yeah. And I think that's why people just feel they're being patronised to, treated like children. And if you start saying that things can be banned if they're offensive, we know where that leads. And the Law Report, by the way, made it clear that they thought offensive cartoons, and they cited infamous offensive cartoons, should be banned. Now, we've just seen somebody in France beheaded for teaching a free speech class about those offensive cartoons. I would have thought that we should see that this, you know, fairy tale in New York seems like the annual argument at Christmas about whether we should have this word. Let's remember the context here, which is this is about whether we live in a free society and whether free speech exists. So it's more important than just some silly little trivial.
And that's the thing. And it's about people deciding on our behalf. You're back to last night of the Proms and Royal Britannia and sort of, oh, I don't like these lyrics, or someone doesn't like these lyrics, and therefore they're unacceptable. And again, even if it's the majority of people don't like it, it doesn't mean it shouldn't be allowed. And that's the key. And there seems to be so much of an appetite now for people to want their there to be censorship and control and that people expect never to be offended. It doesn't bother me if someone says or does something that I don't like, unless it personally, you know, hurts me or physically, or it is inciting violence or it's abuse. It is currently legal in the law and it should remain legal.
And it's important for art. I mean, artistic freedom is an incredibly important thing for us to defend. So, you know, whether you like the song or not,
yes.
The point about it is that somebody created that as an artistic work. And, you know, think about what it means if you've effectively got bodies of institutions going around saying, no, that's offensive, take it off the walls, you know, cover it up. Now, as it happens, we are getting that. And the whole notion of, I find that offensive, and one of the reasons I wrote the book, was because they're increasingly, all you have to do is to say, I find that offensive, and you can get something banned, silence someone, shut someone down. And that is not a healthy society for a democracy, because you need to have artistic freedom, you know, academic freedom and free speech. So I just get worried that this can happen and people say, well, of course, in the modern era, we can't possibly have that phrase being used. We will make that decision because we think it could cause damage. And the point you also just made was, hearing that word might offend someone, but it doesn't mean that that's the end of the world. I'm offended every day. People say things that really drive me mad. But you can't be in a situation whereby you say that if something's offensive, it should be banned. That's the important thing about it.
Yeah.
Online, on DAB, and on the Talk Radio app. Talk Radio.
So let's talk about the prospect of, well, getting this vaccines on the market and getting them rolled out a million people a day. That's what The Sun's reporting today. Let's talk to Professor Hugh Pennington, Emeritus Professor of Bacteriology at Aberdeen University. Good morning to you, Hugh.
Hi there.
Hi there. I mean, it's all very promising, isn't it? Three vaccines looking like they're on the cards very, very soon. Certainly the Pfizer one could be out, you know, a couple of weeks. They say basically within hours of it getting approval, they can have it, you know, in doctor's surgeries, ready for people to get the vaccinations. Oxford University vaccine coming very soon. We know that the Moderna one from America, we wouldn't be able to get hold of it until Europe gets hold of it next Easter. But lots of very promising news. Now we've got the talk about 1 million a day getting vaccinated, recruiting 40,000 extra people to do those vaccinations. Is that, do you believe, remotely feasible and viable?
I'm extremely surprised if it happened. I mean, OK, everybody's pushing very hard to get the vaccine delivered. There's a question, of course, about how many people are going to actually get it and who's going to get it. Because it's going to be, I think, phased in the way that one might expect. That, you know, people in care homes will get it. Healthcare workers will get it, then the over 80s, and then we'll move down the age groups, because clearly this virus is very unusual in that the severe effects of the virus are directly related to your age. So that's the right way to do it.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, the logistics, this year we haven't been as good at the logistics as many people.
I think you're making a very fair, reasonable point there. I think a lot of people would. I mean, again, we want to be optimistic, but it is easier to roll out a vaccine that's ready-made and just literally like inject people. It is easier to do that and to train people to do it, and that process is easier and quicker than it is to do swab testing and get those back into the labs and get them processed and get the results out. There is an argument that this could be a simpler process than the swabbing.
Well, the Pfizer one has the disadvantage that, you know, the initial stocks have to be kept at minus 80.
Yeah.
And now that's not a technical issue in the sense that you can buy a minus 70, minus 80 freezer, but you've got to have them.
Yeah.
And you've got to have them in the right place, and you've got to make sure that they're maintained, and you've got to make sure that then the vaccines are taken out and put at the right temperature.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to be jabbed with something at minus 18.
No,
to
but also, I suppose, well, I mean, and two, kind of thing. No, and you also, two jabs, it is one thing. I mean, I know that GPs have a real issue, you know, often getting mums in with the babies who need a booster jab. Well, they've had the first one, and then they tick that off their list, you know, mentally, and don't go back for the second one. Talk us through what happens in terms of, let's just say, within a couple of months, fingers crossed, we've got most of the, you know, the very ill and elderly, people in care homes, over 80s vaccinated. They are by far the highest risk. That's when the risk really, really starts sitting. Or even over 70s and in a few months after that. At that point, could we be justified in all going back to normal? Or do we need to wait until, you know, 80-90% of the population overall, including the 20-year-olds and 5-year-olds, are vaccinated before we can go back to normal life?
Well, that's the big question. I mean, basically, this vaccine is going to be used... Well, vaccines are used in two different ways. One is to protect people, like the tetanus jab. You know, if you get a wound and you get soil in it, and you might get tetanus, and you have a jab to protect you against that. We all have that, early in life and so on. But that doesn't actually get rid of the bug. The bug is still out there. Now, the first phase of this vaccination will be to protect people, just as in the way that a tetanus jab protects you against getting a wound infection. It stops the bad effects of that happening, which is why we're going for the elderly. And then, of course, the healthcare workers are much risk as well. And then we have to worry about, well, we don't have to worry about it. The population would like to see the vaccine being used to stop the virus dead in its tracks, get rid of it, so that we can then go back to the old normal. Yeah. Now, that is a big question in the sense of how many people do you have to vaccinate to get to that position? And that's when really the general population comes in, because a lot of people are going to have to be vaccinated who don't actually need it for protection. They need it to protect other people.
Yeah. And that's the key thing, isn't it? That's where I think a lot of people are holding out a little bit too much hope, said, oh, we just get this small number of people. The people who need the protection isn't a small number of people. We are talking many millions. But the fact that it's going to take longer to roll it out to everybody, isn't it? Let's also talk about masks. A long-awaited Danish study into the efficacy of mask wearing and whether or not that does actually stop the virus being transmitted, finally been published. They spent weeks and weeks and weeks with virtually every single major medical magazine and publication like The Lancet and others refusing to publish the study. It has now, after being leaked, has now been studied. And it is basically, to all intents and purposes, it is basically found that there isn't really any noticeable, significant, verifiable effect on people wearing masks or not wearing masks in terms of them being at higher risk of the virus. They basically had a control study of people working in a supermarket in Denmark, and they had 3,000 participants, and people were told either to wear masks or not wear masks. And so it was effectively a randomised controlled trial, but it's the highest quality scientific evidence we have yet so far. What it has shown is that for the person wearing the mask, there is really no difference whatsoever in terms of their risk of contracting the virus. However, what it doesn't show, because it'd be impossible to carry out this test, is whether or not it puts other people at lower risk if you wear a mask. But what do you make of this, not only this study being published, how little coverage it seems to have had? Because my God, if it said yes, 100% this keeps people safe, that'd be all over the front pages. And the fact that these peer-reviewed journals, medical journals, refuse to accept this publication.
Well, this is all very sensitive stuff, because mask wearing has become a very political issue. The US, I mean, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, determines whether you wear a mask or not, which is daft. It's daft. Yep. I mean, it's nothing to do with the science. It's to do with politics. And clearly, mask wearing has become a kind of iconic sort of thing. You wear a mask, you're doing good, you're protecting
yourself.
You're
a good person, yes.
That's right. And it's so obvious, you know, if you're wearing a mask, you know, everybody can see that you're wearing one, and everybody can see if you're not and all that kind of stuff. I'm not surprised by the results. That basically, I think the general view among scientists is that wearing a mask, if you've got the virus, makes it much less likely. Well, it makes it less likely you're going to infect somebody. But if you're wearing a mask to protect yourself, it's much less satisfactory in that respect, particularly the way people wear masks.
Yes.
It might have some beneficial effect, and there are some who say that, well, it may not even be a good thing under certain circumstances. So wearing a mask is not particularly protective. And just think about it, you know, there's a gap around the edges, and it falls off down your face, or you're not having it covering your nose. And we know that the virus basically likes living up people's noses and all that kind of thing. And that's the place where it gets in and starts off.
But the key thing is we need, when there are studies showing, you know, the latest, most comprehensive evidence, we should be told about it, shouldn't we?
Well, I think so, really. And I think it should be done in a way that basically can convince people that, yes, wearing masks is a very good thing if you've got the virus, because it makes it a bit less likely or less likely hard to say precisely, but it does reduce the risk that you're going to infect other people.
Online, on DAB, and on the Talk Radio app. Talk Radio.
Thanks for listening to the Julia Hartley Brewer Daily. If you liked what you heard, please subscribe and give me a good review. And don't forget to catch me on the Talk Radio Breakfast Show every weekday from 6:30 until 10.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.